Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Billy Shulman. Hi, Billy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. This is truly an honor. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. You've been a longtime Patreon supporter of the show. People that have been listening to the show for a long time have been hearing your name every season, and I deeply appreciate that. It's not a prerequisite to be on the show, but I also can appreciate a good payola once in a while. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really excited to finally have you on. We're here to talk about the 24th episode of season 8, Back Pay, which originally aired on March 10th, 1980. But of course, Billy, you know what's coming up. What's your MASH origin story?
All right. So let me try to summarize this as concisely as I can. So I grew up, I was born in 82. So I was born literally when MASH was ending. My family, my parents used to watch it all the time when I was a kid, and I couldn't stand it. I'd be like, oh, God, song. Oh, but there's a but. You know, in the late 90s, I'm in high school, and you know, what we used to do back then is we'd get on our dial-up computers and message each other on Instant Messenger. And, you know, I'd be up late. I had a TV in my room, no cable. You know, it was a little different back then. And I used to see MASH on the local Fox station. And I would just watch the episodes every night. And I think because I was a little bit older, I rarely enjoy history, social activism, kind of things like that, it really resonated. And so it just became part of my routine, you know, checking in with friends, having MASH in the background. And then over time, I started, you know, learning more about it. I read the book, I watched the movies. I enjoy the movie. I know you have your own feelings towards it, but I truly enjoy the film. It's very different than the show, but
oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I love the humor. I love the actors. The football scene's a little wacky, but everything building up to that is just amazing. And just a quick funny story to connect me to you in a weird way, right? So I know you're a big Bob Dylan fan, and so my username, like, you know, 26 years ago, and I still use this username for certain accounts, is Jimmy Dylan 4077. Because I love Jimi Hendrix, I got Bob Dylan, and then whenever I need a number, I always pick 4077. I mean, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong,
right?
Yeah. And so, I bought the DVDs back when they were released. I don't have them anymore. My DVDs were stolen many, many years ago.
Oh,
and
no!
So, yeah. I mean,
who steals DVDs? Like, what?
I mean, I'm talking like 2001, right? Like, this is like,
I guess they had some resale value in 2001,
yes.
But oh,
no,
Lord.
it was funny because, I actually reverted back to VHS, and so I was messaging my old roommate from college, and I was like, hey, Stump, do you remember when I used to play the VHS recorded episodes off Fox 5 of MASH? He's like, yeah, you got me into that show, you knucklehead. And so I used to record them and then, you know, kind of watch them at night just to kind of wind down. And unfortunately, you know, Back Pay wasn't part of that. One of my episodes that I used to record. You know, here we are. And then MASH, you know, I just wanted to, the last thing I wanted to say, because no one needs to hear all this, but I'm here, is that, you know, MASH, you know, really coming back from the pandemic and during the pandemic, you know, that was my comfort show. And literally, I probably watch a little bit of MASH every night just because it's like being with friends. And I love the humor. I love the actors, as we, you know, that's why we're here. And then I also wanted to say, you know, your podcast has been a big help to me over the years. I always listen to a podcast or something before I go to bed. And or if I'm out for a run or in the car, and I have listened, I think your podcast, the MASHcast, was like my number one podcast last year.
Oh, goodness.
Maybe like I do like fantasy football, so like depending on the year. But like I listen to so I re-listen to so many of your episodes. Especially I love when Kevin Lauderdale's on and Corey Drew and Shawn Marks, like and Dr. Hunch. You've got so many great guests, and it's just like I feel like I've gotten to know them over the years just because of their appreciation and the conversation you've had with them. And so for my happiness and pleasure over the years, I've really, really enjoyed your podcast. And that's why I became a Patreon member, because without you really knowing it, you've brought happiness and just a sense of community to me. When sometimes we go through stuff and it's just like we just need to be around people and things and parts of the culture that really lift us up. And so I truly believe you are part of that, at least for me, and I'm assuming for a lot of the fans of MASHCAST. So I just wanted to say thank you for making this happen and for continuing it after all these years.
Well, thank you. That's a very nice thing to say, and it's a very nice thing for me to hear. Thank you very much. The show is blessed with many great guests. I'm really very, very fortunate that so many people still care about this show, and as we're going on and on, new people are getting into it and stuff. And you're getting your friends into it and stuff like that. You drag people into it. So you say you watch it every night. Do you own it on like streaming? Like, how do you watch it every night?
Yeah, so I so so funny. So I use Disney Plus, or I use I've you know we've used Hulu, Disney Plus for many years, and so I watched it through them. And then this is funny. So there was a couple weeks, earlier in the year where Disney didn't have it, and you had messaged me and we you told me, hey, can you do this show? And I'm like, absolutely. And then I got really scared because I couldn't get Disney Plus. So I go on Amazon and I downloaded the episode, and they had like a sale at the time. So I downloaded a couple seasons for like $10, like a season. And so, I primarily use Disney Plus or to watch it. Sometimes I'll catch it on TV, but yeah, I mean, back in the day, I used to watch it on Fox. FX used to have it, TV Land. And I'm trying to think. Yeah. That's where I used to watch it back in the day.
Because that was part, I talked about that. I watched it on Philadelphia, and
Philadelphia.
it aired twice a night, four times a night. It aired from 7 to 8 and then like 11 to 12. And it was just, that was like as you say, it was like the perfect go to bed thing to be on from 11 to 12, right? It was the perfect, like, oh, I'm gonna hang out with all my pals. Oh, I'm gonna drift off to sleep. This is fantastic. So, but of course, in this age of, it's not really playing too much anymore. I know it's on MeTV, I think, still occasionally. But yeah, well, now you own it on streaming. Yeah, then it's easy, because I bought it all on iTunes, had a sale a bunch of years ago, and I bought all 11 seasons for like $30 or something. So now I've got it
Yeah,
forever. So it's good. So, well, that's great.
absolutely.
That's great that you're able to just kind of, now, do you, before we get to the episode, I have one last question about those. When you say you watch it at night, are you watching them in order, or are you jumping around?
So it's interesting. I have learned over the years that I am more of a fan of the beginning and middle than more of the end. And so if I'm typically watching, I'll probably start like I go through these weird cycles where I will, if I've listened to your podcast, I got to go back to that episode and watch that. And then if it's a season two, then I'll just keep going and going until I get to a point where I'm like, I don't want any more Frank. Let me go to Winchester and go there. So it really just kind of depends on the mood where I'm at. But I typically don't get too far after season eight, and then I'll kind of go back. But I look at all of it. I play with all of it. I
Okay.
wish there was a button where you could just press shuffle and it would just play a random MASH episode, because I probably watch, Deal Me Out way too many times. So.
It would be fun, right? This has got to be something that streaming channels are working on, or maybe even some of them have already implemented this and I just don't know about it.
Sure.
But like, it would be cool if you could put in like keywords for a series, like poker, and it shows you all the MASH poker episodes. Sydney
Absolutely.
Friedman, and it shows you all the Sydney. Who would not want to watch all the Sydney Friedmans? back to back to back to, you know what I mean? Like that would be fantastic. It just some like they would just issue the streaming channel a dozen keywords that you could plug in. I think that would be enormously fun to kind of go at it from there, like no laugh track, and you get the five that
Yes.
didn't have laugh tracks or something like that. That'd be really cool.
No, that would be cool. Like, and I'm gonna, this is a smooth segue. Jerry Fujikawa, you know, put that keyword and get all of his episodes because he is one of my favorites, and I was happy to see him in this episode.
Well, nice. Well done, sir. Nice
I
segue.
was trying to set you up, my friend. I was trying to set you up.
Have you podcasted before? That was terrific. So, okay.
I
Let's
just
talk.
listened to him, sir. I just listened.
All right, well, that doesn't mean you're good at it. So far we're doing great here, Billy. So the episode is Back Pay. I mentioned it aired on March 10th, 1980, so it is older than my guest. It was written by Tad Mumford and Dan Wilcox and Dennis Koenig, and directed by Burt Metcalf. Hawkeye gets enraged when he reads in a newspaper about a doctor back home charging the army a fortune to X-ray young men about to be sent into the army. Even though that's not entirely on the up and up, the army's response seems to be one of indifference. To get some sense of satisfaction, Hawkeye sends an itemized bill to the army, charging them for every surgery, X-ray, and examination, totaling over $38,000. Colonel Potter is aghast when he learns of the bill and when the army sends a Captain Snyder to look into it. Snyder sneers at Hawkeye, calling it a bunch of hot-headed, self-righteous nonsense, but Hawkeye refuses to give up. He turns to BJ for moral support, but BJ thinks Hawkeye is wasting his time trying to extract any sort of justice from the army. After asking some local Korean doctors that were visiting the unit and driving Winchester crazy with questions about what they do when a patient won't pay, Hawkeye gets the idea to take possession of one of the Jeeps in the motor pool as partial payment. Potter yells at Hawkeye to no avail. He figures he just has to ride Hawkeye's tirade out, so he allows him to keep the Jeep for the moment. The only problem is Hawkeye went so far as to tell Captain Snyder he's taken the Jeep, prompting another visit from him to the 477th. Snyder and Hawkeye talk in Klinger's office when Hawkeye still refuses to give in. Outside, Snyder hears his Jeep engines start up and runs outside just in time to see that someone has stolen it. Hawkeye finds all this very funny, getting Snyder so mad that he starts physically threatening Hawkeye. In a fit of rage, he kicks Hawkeye's giant bag of X-rays, causing him to yowl in pain. Hawkeye takes a look at the injury and then does an X-ray. He agrees to find Snyder's Jeep and return it if and only if Snyder pays $4 for the X-ray. Snyder, furious, agrees, and Hawkeye tells him that his foot isn't broken, merely sprained. Snyder gets even more mad, but Hawkeye could care less. We learn that it was BJ who stole Snyder's Jeep in his own anonymous show of support for his pal. Hawkeye and BJ share a drink at the Oak Club, and he leaves the $4 as a tip. All right, so this is Back Pay. Billy, now you mentioned earlier that you tend to not go into the later seasons as much as you do the earlier seasons, but it does have, you mentioned, Jerry Fujikawa as one of the three doctors. I barely mentioned that in the synopsis of the whole Winchester storyline, and we'll get into all that before we get into the episode. So briefly, why is that? Why do you think that is? What is it about the later seasons that you tend not to revisit as much as the early ones?
You know, I think part of it is that they often start repeating certain themes and storylines, you know, and so I sometimes feel like, man, I feel like they're just like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. You know, there are some very creative and amazing episodes in the later seasons, but then I feel like there's also a mix of episodes that are just, it just feels like they're phoning it in, so to speak, with the script or where they're going. Now, let me tell you something. I love MASH. I'll watch any MASH. So, you know, any MASH episode is going to be great. But I guess the other aspect of it too is that I am, you know, I love the Three Stooges. I love the Marx Brothers. So like, I love, you know, that humor. And I feel like in the earlier episodes, especially like seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5, I just feel like it's just that's the golden humor. I just feel like Hawkeye's, you know, kicking butt. You know, you've got Henry, you know, making jokes. You got Klinger. You got Frank, you know, going nuts. And so I just feel like the humor is just it just appeals to me a little bit more.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. This definitely has, they literally mentioned the Three Stooges in this episode, so they got a perfect connection there. This episode opens in the scrub room where we find out that the three visiting Korean doctors are coming by, and they're going to have to ghost one of the doctors. And Potter assigns Winchester, which he immediately objects to. And you have to think that now he says, "You're our man in thoracics." So, and you've logged some teaching time. And so he's initially kind of like, okay, that makes total sense that he's not doing it to kind of pick on Winchester. But then, of course, Hawkeye, he says, "Well, we're gonna leave it up to Hawkeye." And Hawkeye says, "Well, as long as, since Charles has expressed so little interest, he does." And it's just already one of my favorite jokes of the episode of like, does Winchester really think Hawkeye's not gonna do that to him? Like, has he met the man at all? Like, he has to know that Hawkeye's gonna take any chance he get to stick it at him, And it's sort of funny. Winchester's like, "Oh, come on. Like, what the hell, Charles? You had to know that was coming."
Absolutely. I mean, it's just Hawkeye wants to see Charles in a little bit of pain, in a little bit of pain. And who doesn't?
He really sort of like calls around for it. And so the three doctors, as we just mentioned, one of them is played by Jerry Fujikawa, who plays Dr. Wu. This is his sixth of seventh MASHes. The always dependable Shab Simono is Jin. This is his second of two MASHes. He, of course, was in the Dear Comrade episode. And Peter Kim plays Dr. Po. This is his only appearance on MASH. He was on other TV shows like Saint Elsewhere or The Shield, and he's in the movie Mr. Saturday Night. And so we then get Winchester performing the instructions to the doctors, and he could not be, more snide about it. And it's all because he thinks that they're not really doctors. And it is definitely one of it's very typical of Winchester, but it is also, one of his less positive traits that he regards these guys this way. But then you get this really great moment right at the top of the episode where they open the chest cavity, and the three doctors start kind of gasping, and they say, "We are Buddhists. We are not allowed to cut open a living body." And he says, "Never before have we seen the inside of a human body." That is by itself pretty amazing. Imagine never seeing that, and then it's right there in front of you. And then Winchester has this really kind of beautiful little speech about blood coursing through the large arteries, returning through the veins, the lungs moving back and forth. All a part of a larger design that humbles our meager imaginations. It's an incredibly poetic little speech that Winchester is almost religious. And it's little, I think it's a little surprising to come out of him. And I really like it. It's a really great little piece, right again, right at the top, within like the first 90 seconds of the episode.
Let me tell you something. That is in the middle of a lot of bad puns. That speech really sticks out. And as you were describing it, you gave me some chills because as you were describing it, it almost makes me want, like, I want David Ogden Stiers. I want him to narrate my life if he was alive. Like, I want him to be my narrator because I mean, and I know he did that later. In his career, but he just has such a way with words. He's just so eloquent, and you really feel the emotion and the experience in that few seconds. I agree. It's
Yeah.
amazing.
You just know it's again, it's got a religious bent to it, or at least maybe not religious, but theological bent to it that I just would not expect from Winchester. You never get the sense Winchester has any religion at all. He certainly doesn't go to Father Mulcahy's sermons or anything like that. So it's again, it's a really wonderful. But yes, David Ogden Stiers, I don't even know. I wonder if he ever did like audiobooks or something. He would be,
Oh,
he
yeah.
would have been amazing, right? He would have been
Oh,
absolutely
my
great.
gosh. Yeah, absolutely.
So then we're cutting back to over to the mess tent, and it's later at night, and all the doctors are coming out of surgery, and everyone's tired. And Klinger says, "Oh, some mail came in, and I've been holding it for a little pick me up for all of you." there's a great line where Margaret says, "Oh, I got four," and BJ says, "Probably thank you notes from that barbershop quartet," which is great. And I love the daggers she shoots at BJ. He says that, and he never looks at her in the eye, right? Which is kind of like, It's interesting. They normally don't kind of have that dynamic a little bit, but nevertheless, I just like that BJ threw this sort of cheap shot in, and Margaret just kind of gives him this, oh, okay. But I did think that was very funny. And then Potter opens up his letter, and it's from Mildred, and it's a bunch of swatches for the couch. And he's like, Margaret, one has butterflies, and one has like, and it looks like it has flowers or something. And he says, Margaret, you're a woman. Could you pick one of these for me? And I love that she starts to hold in her laughter, and she says in the most polite way possible, are there any more swatches in there, sir? Which is
I love her tact right there because those are some 1970. I don't know, man. Those are ugly.
They are ugly. Those two are very ugly. So I would not want to sit on a couch with either one of those. Are pretty butt ugly, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I think we were all Margaret in that scene.
Yeah, I love that she doesn't want to upset him, right? Like she doesn't. She
Oh,
loves him so
absolutely. She's
much.
got tact. I mean,
She's
she's
got
got
tact.
a, you know, she looked up to, she looked up to Colonel Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, are there any other swatches in there, sir? It's just so polite. It's so sweet. So, then Hawkeye reads the newspaper clipping about the X-rays. Now, this is one of the things we've talked in other episodes where like BJ gets stuff in the mail from Peg that's kind of upsetting, and I'm always like, does Peg know her husband at all? Why would Hawkeye's dad send him this? He's got to know it's just going to piss him off. Why would you mail all the way to Korea just to tell him that? It does seem kind of like, could you, I know that, him and his son are very close, and he probably has the sense of moral indignation, and he figures Hawkeye will feel the same way. But it is a little like the poor guy is over there in Korea, risking his life performing surgery. Why would you send something that's just going to piss him off?
Well, and so, okay, so here's my big question in this episode, and I go back and forth. Is Hawkeye jealous of the money that these doctors are making, or is he truly upset with, you know, how they these doctors are abusing the system? Because, like, I have a hard time. I don't know. Maybe for me, that's a hard question because I feel like in some cases he's jealous of the money, but by the end, I feel like his idealistic, persona comes through. I don't know. Maybe that's my interpretation, but did you have anything similar?
I don't think it's the money exactly. It's the injustice of it. It's both. It's that A, this guy is making a killing, no pun intended, or pun intended, by doing that. And as he says, you might as well mark these guys USDA prime
Yeah.
because they're making so much money. And then conversely, he is then making peanuts doing much more important work. So it's kind of like the way that, unfortunately, when someone dies wrongfully and the family can sue. And what's the only thing you can really, if it's not a criminal case, the only thing you can get is money. And that feels very tacky because you're sort of putting a dollar figure on someone's life, which is unfortunate. But what other system, unfortunately, in our late stage capitalism, do we have than assigning a dollar value? So I think it's that. It's more just like, I'm over, as he says, I'm over here busting my butt, 8 days a week, 25 hours a day, or whatever he says. So I think it's that. It's like, I make next to nothing saving lives. And this guy, he says, I've been so busy, I've had to give up my golf game. So, I mean,
Yeah.
and also he's probably mad that that guy's not serving, right? He's over there and this guy is in his cushy office. So it's all that stuff rolled into one. That's always how I took it.
Yeah, it's a little jealousy. It's a little like, you know, the system's not fair. Yeah. And yeah, no. I appreciate you kind of walking me through because I just feel like because I've seen arguments both sides, and I'm like, it's just I don't, yeah. But I want to believe in my heart that Hawkeye is upset about the injustice because
Yeah.
he is the idealist that we look up to.
Yeah. And he has no other way of registering his fury other than with a dollar total. There's just no other way to signify it. So that's why he's going through all of the forms and stuff. And you see, he's got all the piles of all the various things he's been doing, the resectings and stuff like that. Then we get an appearance from Rizzo carrying a bag of X-rays. It's kind of a funny idea. That do they keep all the X-rays they've ever taken? That seems a curious use of space, right? The key, I guess they have to keep medical records. Maybe the doctors Ange and Chris, who listen to the show, will be able to maybe have an opinion on that. But it just seems strange that they would like, you know, where is there some where in the supply shed? Is there like just this pile of X-ray somewhere? I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. And especially because it's a mobile, you know, they're mobile. So like anytime they move, they got to carry, you know, it's just files and files of the thousands of people that go through. Like,
Yeah.
yeah,
And
where
X-rays
are
probably
these
weigh a
people?
ton, right? They probably
Well,
are
that's
quite
true.
heavy.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't
Yeah.
know. We'll
I
find
mean,
out.
I understand why they have the files, right? That makes sense. They have all the files of some. Again, where are they storing those? I guess somewhere in the storeroom that we never saw. So Hawkeye totals up all the various things, resections and this and that, and then it gets Klinger to total up, and then we have this nice cut to a Potter yelling $38,215, which would be $468K in today's money. So obviously quite a bit of money. And then that's when we meet Captain Snyder. Captain Snyder is played by actor Richard Hurd, born 1932, passed away in 2020. One of those guys with a million credits, a ton of them in big, big movies. He's in All the President's Men. He's in China Syndrome. He's in The Onion Field. He was relatively recently in Jordan Peele's Get Out. So, and he did tons and tons of television. So just one of those guys, right? Just one of those guys you saw. And Snyder is, of course, having absolutely nothing about this. He, you know, you could see from his face that, you know, he regards Hawkeye as even, I think he literally says like a malcontent. So he's going into this with these two are just chemically, you know, oil and water, these two. And he's not finding any of Hawkeye's jokes funny or anything like that. And you should just know that whoever they assign this case to, this is probably the least guy who is going to see Hawkeye's point of view in this at all. And Richard Hurd just has a wonderfully mean face. I don't mean to besmirch the man, but he just has a kind of great scowl. So you know, he kind of reminds me of a character they would have met in the first couple of seasons, right? Where Hawkeye and Trapper would be pulling scams. This is the kind of guy they'd run into.
Listen, when I see Richard Hurd, the first thing I think of is Mr. Wilhelm from Seinfeld, because he was George's boss. He was such a just a funny guy in that episode. And then seeing him here, much younger, and really the counter to Hawkeye. Like, this could have been a character they'd gone back to a few times, just because he really I just love the chemistry between him and Hawkeye. Like, there is some strong emotion in both of their faces and actions throughout this episode. Yeah, no, 500 grand. Good luck, Hawkeye.
Yeah. And it's in this scene that we get the whole idea of the X-rays are $5 or $4 a piece. That's obviously it's going to come back in the final scene of the episode, but we're getting the breakdown of, okay, the X-rays are $4. That's what Hawkeye is charging. And he even says, you know, I'm not even charging, you know, for my overhead. And of course, sometimes when the bombs are falling, I have no overhead and stuff like that. So it's good. But yeah, there's some real energy between the two of them. And of course, Potter's trying to navigate this a little. And he knows Hawkeye. He knows Hawkeye's not going to give this up anytime soon, right? And even says, you know, everything about my queasy gizzard, saying that he knows that Hawkeye's not going to drop this. So then we're in post-op, and Winchester is being bothered by the three doctors. That's when he drops the Larry Curly Moe reference, and presumably, and they're like, "Who are these guys?" And he says, "Oh, they are learned philosophers who have earned the deepest respect of our compatriots." I guess he's figuring that, of course, they have no idea who they're, you know, talking about. Now, you said you're a big fan of the Stooges. Was that a childhood thing, or did that continue into adulthood?
Oh man, my dad, yeah, I mean, he, you know, he raised us right. We watched Three Stooges when we were young. We used to it used to be on like every Sunday morning
Oh,
back in
yeah.
the day.
Oh, yeah.
It was on all the time. We had some VHS's, videotapes too, and it was just part of growing up, you know, and you know, the Marx Brothers as well. You know, just that type of humor was really a part of how I grew up. And I'm more of an old soul, so like I love, watching those classics, and the older films and television, and that's probably one of the reasons I really like MASH, as well, just because though it's older, I mean the themes still resonate today and will resonate forever. But I mean, and the other reason, MASH, is because it incorporates a lot of the, the humor and the history that just really resonates with my life and my interests. I just wanted to say real quick though, I love Potter in this episode. I love, he really is a true leader. And in the last few years professionally, I've kind of moved up and I lead a school, and there's a couple moves he does in this episode that I'm like, man, he really knows what he's doing. And he's able to look at both sides. He's able to use his relationship with Hawkeye to kind of motivate him. There's a scene later where he moves them to a quieter place because they're having the argument. Like, there's just a lot of great moves he makes in this episode that really resonate with me. And I'm also on the shorter side, so I appreciate a gentleman of certain stature who can throw his weight around and people respect and listen to him.
He knows that that's essentially all he's got against Hawkeye because he knows Hawkeye's not going to listen. So it's all he can do is basically lean on Hawkeye and sort of say, not say, but like the kind of like, you respect me, and I know. Yes, he's the commanding officer, but he knows Hawkeye's not going to listen, essentially. So it's the only this kind of moral weight Potter can throw around is like, kind of like, you're making my life miserable. Could you knock this off, kind of thing? And then even sort of, in the scene what I'm just talking about, where Hawkeye's talking to BJ about it, and BJ's not giving him any quarter. And he calls him Don Quixote at one point, and he says, "We're dealing with the U.S. Army, the people who sent us to war to make peace." It's a phrase we're hearing nowadays, and and it's f as the as an audience member, when you love these guys together, it's frustrating to watch BJ not give Hawkeye, any rope there. You understand it, but he kind of figures like, I got other things to do. But I always am a little like, why? Well, I remember, like, maybe not the first time I watched it, but early on when you watch it and you're kind of like, oh, come on, Beach. Help a pal out.
Yeah, no, he's relatively apathetic for much of this episode. And one, I mean, comparing the later episodes with the older episodes, BJ definitely pushes against Hawkeye a lot more than Trapper did. And but at the end of the day, though, they're on the same team, and that happens in this episode as well. And but that push and pull, that is purely relevant and seen in this episode.
And it makes the ending so much sweeter that BJ comes in at
Exactly.
the end, like Han Solo in the Millennium Falcon right at the end of Star
You're
Wars. That kind of thing.
speaking my language, Rob. You're speaking my language. Yeah.
Woohoo! That kind of thing. Let's blow this thing and go home. So then Hawkeye talks to the three Korean doctors and he asks, what do they do if a patient won't pay? And they talk about that they'll take chickens sometimes in place of pay, and that Hawkeye gives him an idea of like, oh, wait a minute, that I got an idea. And right at that moment, Winchester pulls his back out and they have to sort of rescue him, and they want to help him, and the three doctors want to help Winchester, and of course he has absolutely no interest in helping them, because he in taking help from them, and he says, keep your roots and berries away from me. So okay, we got that going on. So then Hawkeye goes to the motor pool. And Rizzo is, of course, asleep on the back of a Jeep. And I love the whole Hawkeye says, "You are in charge of the motor pool, are you not?" "I are, sir." It's just like Rizzo's kind of nonsensical stuff. And Hawkeye then says, "Well, I am taking possession of this Jeep for," and he hands him a receipt, and he literally drives away with it. And and he says, "What are you doing? Why are you taking my Jeep?" He says, "Because you don't have any chickens." And that is our act break. And then we come back, and this is a scene always cut in syndication. Never saw it till I got the DVDs, which is this extended scene with Rizzo talking to Potter, and you could see they were still figuring out Rizzo's persona because they've moved into the where he's like shiftless, right? He's super lazy. But here he's kind of like in fear of Colonel Potter, which they never really did after this. Like he's really obsequious to Potter and he's afraid of Potter yelling at him and stuff. And I have to think that's just them still trying to figure out this character a little bit.
Yeah, no, so here's another actor character, right? So G.W. Bailey, I mean, like I said, I'm a child of the 80s. He's Captain Harris to me in Police Academy.
Police
And
Academy.
he's such a mean guy in those movies. And seeing him in MASH, he's just like complete opposite. Yeah, I feel like they're trying to figure him out. And he might be, I mean, he's relatively new there, so maybe he doesn't know Potter as well. And
Yeah.
so he's because he's it's well he talks about how he had to become a sergeant twice, so maybe he's been in trouble before.
Maybe his penchant for sleeping on the job is what was getting him into trouble, Rizzo. I don't know. So he splits when Hawkeye shows up, and then him and Potter get into another argument, and Potter's sort of like, you can't take possession of a military jeep, and then Hawkeye keeps kind of like surveying the rest of Potter's office for things he can take, and even says, how much is this? He asks about the desk, about Potter's desk, which, this is only from MASH obsessives. It would have been great if he had asked if the desk was made of oak, like Henry's desk in the second episode of the show. It would have been a great little callback. What's this
Oh
made of? Is this made of oak, Colonel Potter?
man.
But, they have this great line about where he's like, he says, you can't keep taking everything. It's cheap. And he says, we need this stuff. And he says, don't worry. If there's an emergency, I'll give it back. And then he says, I could give you a direct order to return that Jeep. And then, okay, it's a great line. It wouldn't do any good. I just take something else, like the mess tent, which is, I just like that line, the idea of taking the entire mess tent. I find that very funny.
I mean, I just love the fact that Hawkeye like goes to these Korean doctors and asks for their advice, right? While Winchester is, talking down to them, Hawkeye's like, no, how would you do this? And like, I just another example of just their, the way they treat people, especially people that might not be American or from the United States. Yeah, I mean, I just love the fact that Hawkeye just runs with this idea. It drives Potter crazy.
The way he says it, it's so kind of cutesy of like, I'll just take something else, like the mess tent. Like he's, and then Potter finally kind of gives in and says, you're like a cold, you just got to just work your
Yep.
way through it. You know what I mean? Like, I just know you're gonna come out the other side of this. And so in the meantime, keep the Jeep, which is again the sort of way of mollifying Hawkeye. So then we have Margaret trying to help Winchester with his back pain. By the way, we noticed that the wall that the tent would normally be there, then the mess tent wall, and excuse me, the swamp wall would normally be there because we could see the books that Winchester's are normally leaning against the wall. The books are there, but the wall is gone because they've decided to put the camera kind of where it couldn't be in any given episode of the show because we wanted to get like a close up of Winchester's face as he's laying on the pillow. And Margaret is trying to apply warm heat and stuff. And of course, as been established, he is an absolutely terrible patient and he's mean to Margaret. Klinger comes in and tries to help, and he no interest in that. And then Mulcahy comes in and he wants to do a just sort of like hands-on chiropractic kind of thing. And there's for an episode that William Christopher doesn't get much to do, he has a great physical comedy when he does, I'm just going to give that spine one good jolt. And he kind of like does this little thing with his fists, and it's like it looks very painful. I'm like, get the hell away from me.
No, like, and I love all these acts like Klinger and Father Mulcahy and Margaret. I feel like they added this. I mean, this is really all they do. They don't have a lot in this episode,
No.
I love how they have different approaches, and their approaches are kind of similar to their backgrounds in some way, right? Like Klinger's bringing his Lebanese traditions, and Margaret's coming at maybe from like a medical, okay, the warm compress.
Yeah.
Now, Father Mulcahy, I mean, maybe it's the boxing, I don't know, but like, you know, the he's a chiropractor on the side, you know, who knows? I just like how the methods kind of, there's like a little connection to who they are.
Yeah, and he doesn't want any of it. And by the way, I will say, as someone who has had the occasional back pain in my life, I am a big baby about it. So I'm sort of, I understand what it's like to Winchester's, like, just really hurts and you're kind of whiny. Then we're back in the mess tent and Hawkeye and Bajir are talking. Hawkeye is going on and on about the his problem. There's a bit of business that BJ is doing that no one comments on, but yet it's happening. BJ is pouring salt in the sugar bowl.
I noticed that too. And I'm like, does anybody else notice this? Like, am I looking around? Like, nobody notices. It's just us, like the mashaholics, you know, just kind of catching this. Like, and nothing happens with it. Like, it's just, you know, Hawkeye doesn't even, he's like in his own world, you know, complaining. Yeah, I love it. I just love it. Just shows BJ's, you know, tenacity just to practical jokes. That's his coping.
That
That's
is
how he
right. It's
copes.
been established. It's the one aspect of BJ's personality that I don't track with because I hate practical jokes. And it
Me
will
too.
in the next episode, the season finale, it's all about practical jokes. And but so yeah, it's the one piece of BJ that I don't quite cotton to. Hawkeye is of course very tired. Potter wants to have none of it, and he says, you know, catch the late show at the drive-in, Pierce, which is a great little gag. Have you ever been to a drive-in?
Man, I don't think I have. No, I mean, I don't, I it I think there might, like, I live in Maryland. There might be one in Virginia. No, I've never gone. I would love to go.
They're a lot of fun. I've been to many. They're a lot of fun. They are a lot of fun. I just love that reference of just like the idea of catch the late show at the drive-in, Pierce. So then Snyder arrives. Snyder returns because they have gotten another bill, and then he says, "Do you understand? He says, "Colonel Potter, do you understand that he has taken possession? Are you aware that he's taken a possession of one of the U.S. Army's Jeeps?" And Potter's like, "I wasn't aware that you were aware." And so it's like, you're making it worse, right? You're making it worse. Like, you know, you can't really keep the Jeep. So why did you tell Ikor? But we know that Hawkeye's telling Ikor because he wants to rub it in their faces.
No, and like, you know, if you're running a building organization, the last thing you want is for your people to spread the dirty laundry to others, right? Like, you know, Potter's trying to maintain this his way, right? He's, you know, he knows Hawkeye's that unbroken colt, so he's giving him that leeway just to kind of let him play it out. But now Hawkeye is bringing back Ikor, and it's just like, ugh, why are you? You're this isn't good for us, Hawkeye.
Yeah.
You're making us look bad.
Yeah. And then he has a line. He says, "Why stop their piece? Why not stop there, Pierce? Why not call Hedda Hooper?" Now, of course, he's getting the name wrong. It's Hedda Hopper, not Hedda Hooper. But I'm curious, when you were a kid watching these episodes and you would get a reference like that, would that stop you from enjoying it? Or did you just go with the context and go, "Well, I don't know who Hedda Hopper," because who the hell knew who Hedda Hopper was below a certain age, who the hell knew who that was in 1980? Would you go by that, or did you just say, "Well, I don't know who that is, but it's obviously somebody who talks a lot. Fine, I'm moving on."
More of the latter of what you're sharing. You know, I'm a curious person, and so I'd be like, hey, Dad, Mom, who's this person? Or, you know, the 90s, 2000s with the internet, you can look things up, right? So like, it's funny you mentioned that they say the name wrong, because I was Googling it before
Oh,
watching it, and I put
right.
in Hedda Hooper, and I'm like, wait a minute, it's Hopper. And you know, just through the context, you can kind of get a sense that this is somebody who, you know, pushes information or you know, a gossip. And she is a gossip columnist. But I love those little nuggets in MASH, because, you know, as a former social studies teacher, like, those are, I feel like those were like planted in my life earlier to kind of, you know, develop a love of history and appreciation. And you know, another reason why MASH is amazing, it's just that it really is almost like a time capsule of references, not just in the 50s, but the 40s, 30s, and beyond.
Yeah, you have to now. Hedda Hopper was long gone by the time the show rolled around, but there were the occasional actor or cultural figure that the show would mention that was still around when the show aired. And have to wonder, like, did it get to them? You know what I mean? Like, if the show was being watched by 30 million people, you know, did somebody's family member go, "Hey, they mentioned Grandpa last night on on MASH or something"? That had to be fun. You know, I mean, there's episodes where Harry Colonel Potter has mentioned, you know, actresses that he enjoyed, that he worked with, that the real Harry Morgan worked with and stuff. So I love all that kind of stuff. So, but then we get to this line, which to me is the like really significant in my development as a fan of the show and my development as a person, not to be put too fine a point on it, because Snyder says, you know, "How dare you steal a Jeep?" And Hawkeye says, "Well, it's all how you look at it, Captain. One man's theft is another man's justice." And then Snyder says, "This is the army, you goofball. Justice is what Uncle Sam tells you it is. It's not your job to question the government's actions," which gets Hawkeye to respond, "Why not? I find some of their actions highly questionable." And I've always found this to be kind of a curious thing of where how entertainment or art meets you as a person as you're taking it in, because in some cases, like, does it guide you in your opinions, or does it resonate? Does something resonate more because you're already there and it's stating something that you agree with? You know what I mean? Or, you know, or is it a little bit of both? Because I can remember watching this episode and finding all that stuff that Snyder says as a young kid, and I was like, "No, that's not right." You know, that no, that's, I mean, what Hawkeye's doing is ridiculous. But this idea that no, the government tells you what's right and what's wrong, and it's not your job to question it. I even at like a 10-year-old, I was like, "That doesn't sound right." And I have to wonder how much of that was from watching the show, and how much of that was just, I was like that anyway, and the show underscored it by having my favorite people talk about it out loud.
No, everything you said, it hits me in a similar way. We teach our students to empowerment. We talk about the First Amendment. I remember being in elementary school and the rights people have and to protest the government and to redress your grievances. And I go back to 17, like watching 1776 with my dad as a kid, right? And like, no, you can protest, you can go against the government. And just like, no, man. I mean, accountability is what keeps us, a stable and strong nation. And we have to be able to protest and to challenge actions that we feel are, hindering liberty, going against what's right. That's really what separates us from, dictatorships.
Yeah. It's a really great little piece buried in this, you know, relatively, I don't want to use the word standard, but because that sounds like it's a pejorative, but like, you know, this is not one of the, like, most famous episodes of the show. And yet there's this bit of dialogue in it that every time I hear it, I just, my back goes up, like, "Well, what do you hear yourself?" You know? Now, again, Hawkeye's not making, he's not helping his case by being so ridiculous. And maybe that's how Snyder gets away with kind of just dismissing it entirely. But you get the feeling that Snyder would reject anything like that. Anybody who is piping up, he just does not believe in that. And so, again, well played by Richard Hurd there. So it's a great scene. So as you mentioned, Potter then says, "Well, why don't you two discuss this in my office?" Because he doesn't want this to sort of get bleed out into the mess tent for everyone to see. So then we get back in the swamp, and Margaret is trying to help Winchester. She's talking to him like a child. She even says, "Here comes the choo-choo," as she's getting to eat and stuff. And he calls her Madame de Sade, and she finally gets frustrated and walks off. And then we get the three Korean doctors, and Potter says, "Well, we're gonna, you know, you have to get back up on your feet." And they decide they're going to do acupuncture. And of course, Winchester finds that to be completely ridiculous, and it's all just a bunch of needles, which of course makes him utterly terrified. They mention that this treatment is 3,000 years old. Winchester goes, "Happy birthday!" By the way, his hair, when he's laying on the pillow, it shoots out like he is. Once again, to mention the Stooges, he looks like Larry Fine from the Three Stooges, right? His hair is sticking so far out.
Yes, I love it. And I hope they were thinking about that in the back. I mean, I'll pretend they are because he surely does. He surely does look like Larry.
And of course, he doesn't want the idea of getting stuck with needles. Would that upset you? Would you, if you had to get acupuncture, would that freak you out? Some people can't, would not be able to handle it, even if they weren't seeing it. Or would that, you would
No.
just be like, I'll be all right.
I think I'd be okay. I definitely am not the bravest person when it comes to blood removal,
Oh,
getting my
okay.
blood taken. But like, you know, getting a shot or a needle, like I'd be okay. And I know I have colleagues and friends who've done it, who do acupuncture and they swear by it. I like once again, you know, here's Charles, you know. Assuming this is not going to work, he's proven wrong. He's proven wrong. I love it. You love to see it.
So then we're back in back in Klinger's office, and Snyder is trying to get Hawkeye to change his mind, and Hawkeye is absolutely not refusing to do it. And then all of a sudden we hear the Jeep start out, and Hawkeye says he calls him a jerk, and then we hear the Jeep, and he says, "Sounds like you're talking to the wrong jerk." And then we see this pan out, and it's a nice little bit of camera movement from Burt Metcalf where there's obviously no Jeep on the, because they're on the lot. I mean, excuse me, yeah, they're on the set, they're on the sound stage, and so they really probably just don't really have the room to drive the Jeeps around that much. But the camera pulls out in a way to suggest movement, and for the longest time when I would watch this episode, I thought for sure I could see a second of BJ driving the Jeep away, but you can't. You don't see the Jeep at all. That's a total Berenstain Bears kind of thing. There's no picture. I'm remembering that completely wrong. You don't see it at all, and it's all done with a camera movement, which is nice. A nice little bit of camera trickery by Burt Metcalf.
No, it's great, and you know, I mean, who else would it have been?
Yeah,
I
right.
don't
Exactly. Yeah.
know. You know, and but it's you know, like we said earlier, you know, BJ, at the end of the day, he's got his buddies back.
Yeah. And by the way, we mentioned the MASH movie earlier. Stolen Jeeps was like a big thing, right? For a
Yeah.
lot of like the early MASH was always, oh my God, a Jeep is missing. That's the bit. Later seasons, I don't think it mattered. But in the early days, it was like, oh my God, my Jeep is gone. This is the most significant thing, that could ever happen to me, for God's sakes. And so Snyder loses his mind. And he says to Hawkeye, "You've set this whole thing up just to make me look like a fool." And Hawkeye's like, "No, that job's been taken." And Snyder is not having it. He just thinks, "I know you've done it." And he starts threatening Hawkeye. He grabs some X-rays and throws them down. And Hawkeye's like, "You know it wasn't me. I have the greatest witness, you." And then finally, Hawkeye says, after Snyder throws the X-rays down, Hawkeye says, "What are you going to do? Beat it out of me, copper?" Which is a nice little bit of sort of social commentary there. And we see that Snyder is just, kind of a little borderline fashy there, right? He's just like,
Yeah.
"I'm not getting what I want, so I'm going to beat it out of you." We're like, okay. So then he kicks the bag full of X-rays, sprains his foot. I have to think Snyder is the biggest wuss imaginable. He doesn't kick it that hard, and he's wearing a combat boot. Like, come on, man. Like, what? It's not, how bad can it be? And then Hawkeye, of course, being a doctor, is like, "All right, let me take a look at it."
No, the emotion in the scene is you've got a lot of emotion. You've got some genuine fear in Hawkeye. You know, he's backing up, like he's gonna get decked by this guy. You know, Snyder is really losing it. It's like I said earlier, like they are a good antagonist, protagonist that just really represent two different spectrums of MASH.
So then we're back into the swamp, and Winchester sees that his back is healed, and Potter is there to gloat about it, and he shakes their hand and thanks him, and then they say the one doctor, Jerry Fujikawa, says Larry Curly Moe, and the other one says not bad for Three Stooges, which is a great. And there's the look on Potter's face is like, what the hell are they all talking about? And they realize that they know who the Three Stooges are. So then we're in the X-ray room, and Hawkeye is looking at the X-ray, and Snyder is like, look, you took an oath, you got to help me. And Hawkeye says, you've seen too many doctor movies. And he says, I'll make you an offer. I'll get you the Jeep back. I'll heal your foot, but you got to give me $4. And Snyder, of course, is aghast at this, and even has a line. He says, well, he says, I want to see another doctor. And Hawkeye says, oh, don't worry, there's a bunch across the compound. You can just hop over there. And then Snyder says, you know what, Pierce? You really stink. And he really hates Hawkeye. It's just a terrific performance of Richard Hurd. Like, there is no soft comedic tone to this. You really feel like if they ran into each other back in the States, he would beat the crap out of Hawkeye. He really hates his guts.
I love it. No, I mean, it's just they are just so different. I mean, really, oil and water. Like, they are fire and water. There you are. I mean, they are. They just the way they go at each other and the viewpoints they represent. They really are these polar opposites in terms of what they expect. From authority and the way authority should treat or be treated. This is a discussion, this is the question we'll be having for the rest of time. I mean, it's just, how much liberty and how much power should government have? And it's well played in this episode.
And then so Hawkeye reveals to Snyder that it's not broken, it's only sprained. And Snyder's like, you want $4 to tell me it's only sprained? And he says, that's my fee for a pound of flesh. And that is the end of the main part of our episode. And then we get back to the Oak Club, and we find out that it was, of course, BJ who stole the Jeep. And Hawkeye says, I thought tilting at windmills was my game. And BJ's like, hey, I'm a born tiltler. Besides, I couldn't let you be stupid for both of us, which is a great, great turn of phrase. I love that. And it's like, of course, this is like the friend you want, right? This is like your best pal that he's going to. And he didn't tell Hawkeye he was going to do it because Hawkeye
Correct.
genuinely doesn't know. So I like that he went and did it on his own. I thought that was really funny. And then he goes and tells Hawkeye later. I thought that was great. And then Hawkeye asks Roy Goldman how much are the drinks. He says two doubles. That's $1.20. Here's $4. Keep the change. And they walk off. And it's the end of the episode. A terrific, terrific little show.
It is no, and when you were describing BJ, it really hit me. Like, that's the practical joke component to him, right? It's just that I'm like you. I'm not a fan of practical jokes. However, I'd rather have the person doing the joke be on my side rather than being the one getting played. The other thing I wanted to just bring to your attention, at least for me, right? I mean, what modern network shows today are going to make multiple references to Don Quixote and Shakespeare and the
Had a
Merchant of
hopper.
Venice at a hopper? Like, I mean, it's just, you're just not going to see that. I mean, the assumption that the audience knows these references, I'd be curious, how many people would get those today. I appreciate it, as I know you do as well.
Yeah, we mentioned a couple episodes ago, or actually a bunch of episodes ago, that when the Pitt season two was running, they make a reference to a line from MASH. And that was a whole discussion on a podcast I listened to about the Pitt, which was, does anybody know what MASH is? Like, would these kids know what MASH is? And I was like, yeah, they do, because I talked to them. Like, they know what this is, absolutely. So,
Absolutely.
but yes, it's you compile. It would be fun to go through every episode and compile every cultural reference in any given episode of MASH, right? Some are more than others. But yeah, this is like particularly heavy, right? You've got, as you mentioned, the list is, and all over the way, Don Quixote ahead of Hopper. Like those are two very different references. And yeah, they were expecting audiences to know what these things were. Because yeah, no context. I was like, you don't know what Don Quixote was. You're like, well, what is that? What, windmills? I don't know what any of that means. So I mean, it's great stuff. So it's a really solid episode. Like, is it one of their greatest? No, but like, even the worst MASH episode is better than most other TV shows' best episode. So, and as I mentioned,
Absolutely.
buried in it is this great little piece of philosophy that I find to be really fascinating about how art comes to you and does it ratify your behavior? Does it change your behavior? Not behavior, does it ratify your thoughts? But, or does it, when you see it said out loud, do you go, yeah, I've always felt that way, and here's Hawkeye talking about it. So that was something, that whole bit with Snyder really struck me very heavily, even as a young child, and only more so now that I'm a very old man. So Billy, do you have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
Oh man, there's a couple things that I really like. I'm just it's not my line, but I love how Potter uses okie-dokie. I use okie-dokie all the time, and I love how he utilizes it both at the beginning of the episode with Winchester and then at the end of the episode with Winchester, just to kind of bookend how Potter is, pushing his weight around, so to speak. But my favorite line is when Hawkeye is doing the Man in the Ward interview with the three Korean doctors, and when he hears about the chicken, oh, quid pro quo, to wit, to woo, and Jerry Fujikawa goes, me, and Hawkeye goes, no, wrong woo, wrong woo. I love that. I love it. It's silly, it's wordplay. I love
That's another quid pro quo, right? I think I
it.
never knew what that phrase meant until I saw like Sounds of the Lambs or something when they talk about it in there. So, but yeah, that is a funny bit. And I like that you pointed out that Hawkeye treats them with respect as opposed to Winchester, who does not, right? And he just dismisses them. He's like, okay, these are very different doctors, but they're worth consulting. So asking them, well, what happens when the patient can't pay you guys? What do you guys do?
Exactly. And then the great thing about Winchester, though, compared to like a Frank Burns, is at the end of the episode, Winchester does, come off of his mountain and, appreciate what they did and shakes their hands. And, Winchester, he definitely has his perspectives and his viewpoints, but he's much more. He changes, more than Frank would ever change if he was
Yes,
there.
yes.
Like, he definitely evolves and grows. And there's a lot more. So one of the things that was interesting too about this episode, I don't want to hold it too long, is when Winchester is struggling with his back, Hawkeye helps him. BJ helps him. Klinger, Margaret, Father Mulcahy, like, they really care about him, even though he's a jerk and he can be mean and rotten. They still care about him, and you would never have seen that if Frank
Oh,
had hurt his back. I mean, it's just, I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess the closest is when he pulls his hernia, and but they don't even treat him well. Hawkeye's like, yeah, no, we're not doing it. No, go on the cot. We'll come back to you a little later. Yeah.
when he has the hemorrhagic fever, but that's like because it's like pretty serious. And even but
Exactly.
even then they do it kind of grudgingly, right? So
Exactly. It's like, oh God, yeah. But
My favorite line is actually from Sergeant Rizzo when he brings in the X-rays, the bag of X-rays, how heavy it is, and he says, complain, he's complaining about how heavy he is, and he goes, "Must be all pictures of fat people," which it's not that it's a fat joke because I'm not laughing at that. It's the Dada-esque idea of the joke that the pictures of if a picture of a heavier person therefore weighs more than a picture of a. That's like up there with the clinger. Have you ever seen a Lebanese go up in flames? It's not pretty, right? As if a Lebanese person burning to death is somehow more upsetting. I like Dada humor sometimes, and I like when MASH trades in it. So I just like the idea that the pictures of fat people therefore are much heavier than regular pictures of non-fat people. I just like that, and it's something Rizzo would say, and I think he probably literally means it, right?
Yes, that you hit it, because he's not the brightest bulb.
Yeah, so I think that's just a great gag, and I like that they gave a good joke to Sergeant Rizzo. So that was Back Pay, everybody, the penultimate, excuse me, episode of season 8. So, Billy, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much for, again, supporting the show for so long, and I'm glad we finally had a chance to podcast together. So thank you.
Rob, this has been a highlight of my year. My
Oh my
kids
goodness.
have been no, my kids are they're 11 and 15, and they were like so excited for me. They're like, "You're gonna be on a podcast? Can we listen to it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it'll be on in a few months. Just chill."
I'm
And
glad I
so,
didn't say anything they can't hear. I'm glad you.
yeah. Oh, they're fine. They've heard worse. Trust me. So,
Well, that's for you to decide. That's not for
oh,
me to
true.
decide. So,
Okay. Well, you're right. But Rob, I trust
thank you. Appreciate that.
you.
Appreciate that. So, well, again, thank you for doing this, Billy. It was great to talking to you.
I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you for pushing out MASHcast after all these years. You're almost there, sir. You're
We're
almost
getting
there.
there. We're getting there. Yeah, and thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, of which MASHcast is a part, please go to /FW Podcasts, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big salute to Adam Ackerman, Dennis Bailey, Darrell Clark, James K., Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Palm, Rob Riley, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. Again, I really do appreciate it, everybody. So next week will be the season finale of season 8 of MASHcast. So join us then. But until next week, that is all.
And I'm sending him over to your table.
Me? But
the butt stops here, Major. These fellas want to see the chest cavity, and you're our man in thoracics. Not to mention you've logged some teaching time.
Wait a minute. Don't I have a say in this? I am chief surgeon, and I fancy myself a pretty good chest man.
Okay, you decide, Pierce. Who gets to be tour guide?
Well, since Charles has already expressed a deep reluctance,
yes,
he does.